You're listening to The Morning Show on Northern Community Radio. I'm John Bauer, along with Heidi Holden, and you're listening to The Friday Morning Show. And coming up, before 9 a.m., we talk with some of the folks from the Children's Mental Health and their annual event, Stomp on Stigma.
Right now, we're going to focus on mental health as well. Andy Steiner is a Twin Cities-based writer and editor. Before becoming full-time freelancer, she was a senior editor at Utney Reader, editor of the Minnesota Women's Press. She's written a new article for MinnPost called "New Set of Emergency Department Standards May Help Identify Patients at High Risk for Suicide." Andy Steiner joins us now. Thanks for being here, Andy.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So let's first talk about mental health and emergency rooms. Are ERs, emergency departments, are they seeing a lot of people coming in for mental health issues?
This is something that's been on the rise in the last few years. So, I mean, people with mental health issues have often gone to emergency departments, but more and more, because rates of mental illness are increasing in the United States, Minnesota, and all of the United States, and also just people are desperate, looking for places to get help, and so the rates are going up.
You write in this article about how physical pains that someone might go into the ER for might actually be psychological. What did you find out? What are people talking about?
What I learned, the people that I talked to for this article talked to me about how there's lots of physical pains that might also be connected to psychological issues. Some of the major things would be stomach pain, back pain, headaches, those kind of things.
Okay.
And it seems like part of the problem, not the problem, part of the controversy is that sometimes physicians will ask a question if you're struggling or suicidal, and people feel like maybe they shouldn't be asked those type of questions. Is that true?
Well, I think that people can be concerned that, but it's not true. People can be concerned that if you ask someone, are you feeling suicidal, though I don't think you would go out and ask it quite that directly,
right,
but that might suggest something to somebody, and that might actually make them think about killing themselves. But that isn't the case. Research has shown that if you ask a person about that, it's actually helpful to find out, you know, how they're doing, and might actually can help them in the long run. It suggests talking about it does not suggest something. If someone has that on their mind, it's already there.
The Minnesota Health Collaborative has announced a new set of shared standards to address suicide prevention and intervention in emergency departments. Tell us about these standards and what they're doing.
Yeah, so Minnesota Health Collaborative is a group of state healthcare organizations which pull together, and they work on a lot of different larger issues. They came together and devised a new set of shared standards. So what that is, that they're hoping is that members of their collaborative and their emergency departments will have a protocol when someone comes in, that they'll ask them a set of questions, basic screening questions to find out about their mental health, no matter what they're in the emergency room for. I mean, most emergency rooms, when you come in, if you're just been in a car accident and you're clinging to life, they're not going to ask you those questions. But if you come in and say, I'm feeling really like I have this bad headache, they're going, at some point, a healthcare professional, probably a nurse, is going to ask you some screening questions that will kind of determine where your mental health state is. And if you answer no to a lot of the questions that seem sort of, you know, like, have you thought about killing yourself, or do you feel desperate? Have you made plans? If you say no, then you're not going to progress in any further in that screening, and then you'll be finished. But if you continue to answer yes, you might be referred for further mental health help or get help right there in the hospital.
So, Andy, can you give us an example of what those questions might be?
Yeah, so a question might be something like, have you thought about killing yourself? I mean, but it also can be, have you made plans for killing yourself? You know, have you made plans? I mean, because somebody could say, a question might be, have you ever thought about ending your life? And somebody might say yes, just because, if they're being completely honest, because when they were in, you know, eighth grade, they asked somebody to the dance, and that person said no, and then they thought, I want to die. But it doesn't really, you know, ultimately mean something. So, but the questions advance as they go on in the series of questions, and then it will be things like, have you made plans? Have you ever thought about, have you ever done anything to try to kill yourself? That's another question. It's a pretty simple tool. It's called the Columbia Suicide Severity Rating Scale, and that's what they're using in these ER standards.
So, Andy, about 3 years ago, I passed out in my house, and I smashed my head, and I had to go to the emergency room. And they asked me at the time, I was pretty beat up, and they asked me at the time if I was depressed. And and at that time, I was depressed, and they did ask me if I was suicidal, and I have some experience in this, and I thought that was amazing. And my question is there anything negative about these questions? I know some people probably aren't for it being asked these five questions or three questions, but is there anything negative that could possibly come out about it?
There's really no one really believes that there is anything negative that can come out of it. I mean, I guess some people, and people can say, no, I refuse for you to answer these questions. At least the doctor that I talked to from North Memorial Hospital said that if somebody says, no, I don't want to answer these questions, then that's it. They won't force you to answer the questions. But there is also nothing negative. I talked to, for my story, Suzanne Witterholt. She is a psychiatrist and a medical director for mental health practitioners in Alina and their EDs. And she said she thinks it really can save lives. And it can catch something early. And it's not going to suggest something that will make somebody suddenly decide to kill themselves. That's not how it works.
Right.
We're talking with Andy Steiner about her latest article in MinPulse that has to do with emergency departments and identifying patients at high risk for suicide. Tell us a little bit more specifics on what North Memorial's emergency department is doing, like how they're doing this, and then where are people being referred to and how it actually works.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I talked to Chris Palmer, who's the medical director at North Memorial's hospital's ED, emergency department. And so what he talked me through how it works. So basically, when you come in, like I said, if you're in for an extreme emergency like a car accident or boating or something like that, they're not going to stop caring for you and start asking you these questions. But if you come in for something that's not life-threatening, a nurse or another health professional, most likely a nurse, is not going to be when you register. It's not going to say, what's your insurance and do you feel like killing yourself? It's more like it's going to happen once you're getting into the room and being talked to. Someone will screen you with these questions. Like I was saying, it's these suicide severity rating scale questions. If anyone wants to see these questions, they are available online. Just looking up Columbia Suicide Severity Rating Scale, then you get a sense of what the questions are. But then once you ask those questions, they will assess your situation. If you answer no, like I was saying at the beginning, to a few questions, then that's it. You go on to being treated and referred for something for your physical health. Now, if you start answering yes and start to seem like you are at an elevated risk for suicide, they will refer you or bring in. There are people who work, mental health professionals who work in the emergency department, who will probably come in and start talking to you. As the time goes on, there are new programs that North Memorial has with an organization called Vail Place, where they can connect people to this organization, Vail Place, which is an organization for people with mental illness, and they can connect you and help make you get referrals for when you leave the hospital, so that you can see a social worker who can help connect you and refer you to services in the larger community.
So Heidi and I were just chatting. When you go in and get a physical, they will give you a piece of paper and say, are you depressed? And they ask all these questions. But if you came in for a common cold or a flu, would you get asked these very same questions?
In the emergency department? Are you saying? Because they believe at North Memorial, they would do universal screening in the emergency department.
Okay.
I don't know what would happen in a clinic.
All right.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, the article you wrote before the one that we're talking about today is related in a lot of ways. Is Vail Place what you might call a peer-run respite home, or is that something different, right?
Yes, Vail Place is different. Vail Place is in a very interesting and really wonderful place. But I could tell you, I'm happy to talk about peer-run respite, or do you want me to tell you about Vail Place? Peer-run respite?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Okay, peer-run respite is a really interesting concept. There's nothing like this in Minnesota yet, no peer-run respites. But in other states, about 13 states have peer-run respites. But these are homes that are operated and staffed by people who are called peer support specialists, certified peer support specialists. That is people with mental illness. In the state of Minnesota, this is how it works. A person who's had a diagnosed mental illness goes through a special training and works as a peer support specialist, which means providing support to other people with mental illness, talking, support, conversation, that kind of thing. Well, in other states, these homes are rented or purchased, and when a person is in mental health crisis, they can actually go and stay in one of these homes and have peer support, which are staffed by peer support specialists, and those people will provide support and counseling, and you can stay there for, I don't know, three to five days in a room and just have time to kind of heal and try to work on your mental health. These are not, though, psychiatrists or psychologists or social workers who staff these homes. They're only run by regular human beings who have been trained in peer support work. Now, this is only done in, like I said, there's 13 states, not in Minnesota. There is a bill that has been authored. One of the people who authored is Paul Yudke from Park Rapids. You might know him. And he's supporting this to try to get two of these homes set up in greater Minnesota. It's a part of the state that really is in need of more mental health services. So I have to say that other people do say that we have crisis homes in Minnesota which are similar to this, but they are staffed by medical professionals like psychiatrists or psychologists, counselors, and there are places where a person can go in severe mental health crisis. So it's a little different. These mm-hmm. peer support homes are more just like peer-to-peer support, an opportunity to step away from a stressful situation. Representative Yuki was sort of saying he could see it as like a farmer who's depressed, who's been having a really hard time, and wants to just get a few days out away and time to sort of just decompress, could go to a place like this. And it just would be a regular house in a regular neighborhood, probably without a sign or anything like that. There'd be some snacks, but there's no food service. You could bring your own food in, and you can come and go. Oh, that's the other part of it. If you stay at a peer support home, you could just stay there at night and go to work during the day.
It's not instead of mental health treatment. It's in addition to.
No, it's an alternative. Yeah, it would be sort of an alternative to mental health treatment, but it's not instead of. I mean, it's not. Nobody's going to be prescribing you medication. Mm-hmm. There are no, certified mental health specialists. But these are people. But peer support specialists are certified. It's just a different kind of certification.
Oh my gosh, that is, Andy, that is amazing. I think that's spectacular. And, people that struggle with a mental illness oftentimes think they're alone, that nobody else suffers the way that they do. And when you put them with somebody else that has struggled, I think that's just amazing. Congratulations to whoever's doing that. That's amazing.
Well, in Wisconsin, they have them. I can tell you, they have them in Menominee, Milwaukee, there's a couple in Milwaukee, and then they have them in a couple other places, but yeah, not here in Minnesota. But there are, like I said, there are these crisis homes in Minnesota, so it's a little different, but peer support homes are very low cost. They only cost about $441,000 a year to run. That's not a lot, really, when you consider what goes on there.
Okay.
So can we go back to the emergency care? Is it working, or is it just too early to tell?
It's probably too early to tell, but I have to say we're in a pretty desperate situation.
Yeah.
I mean, the suicide rates are so high. I mean, what I reported in my story is that suicide rates are up by 40.6% since 1999 in Minnesota. But that some people say that's low. That number is actually higher than that, as you know. So anything that can happen to help is really important. I think that one thing that's said is that people who do die by suicide, a large percentage of them have been seen in the ED in the year before they die. So it is a place to try to catch people, try to catch people while they are really at risk for suicide. There's no downside to trying to do this. I can't imagine what it would be.
Andy, you mentioned about the, I'm jumping back again, but on the peer-run respite homes, Representative Paul Utke from Park Rapids, and you also mentioned State Rep John Poston from the Nisswa area. So this is going on right now. So people, if you want to comment, you should contact your local legislator, because we do cover the area where both of those representatives do, too.
It's true. I'll say, though, that John Poston said, and it just as when I interviewed him, he said it's the likelihood of this getting approved this year is very low, but he's not going to give up on it, and will work on it next year, too. So just to, it's not that he's, it seems like it's not very likely that it's going to happen, but it could, you never know, I suppose. We're getting close to the end of the session, though.
So. Right, and that, it seems like sometimes that's how the process works, is it has to have conversation the session before, or two even sometimes. So.
Yeah. But it is a pretty low-cost commitment. I mean, well, they're talking about $2 million, which seems like a lot of money. It doesn't seem low-cost to me.
Yeah.
But in the scheme of things at the state legislature, it's not a lot of money to set up two of these homes.
That's Andy Steiner. You can read her article at minpost.com on emergency departments identifying patients at high risk for suicide, as well as her article on peer-run respite homes. Andy, it was great to talk to you. Hope to do it again.
I'd love it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. You're listening to the Friday Morning Show.